Chapter 5. Bastion 16. Gilliman is coming. The First Tower. Daylight District, in a wall, 15th of Secundus. Katsuhiro passed a couple of nights in freezing warehouses, an interminable wait that ended without any warning with an early waking, and they were packed onto another, less luxurious train. An official ordered them off the train at a small halt and took them through to open service ways above the level of the wall. Winter winds threatened to blast the conscripts from the walkways, and they were urged to hold tight to the guardrails. Through streaming eyes, Katsuhiro looked out. Wall was a misleading term for what Katsuhiro saw, for the fortifications were a linear mountain. The wall walk atop it was as broad as a major highway, double-sided with crenellations on inner and outer faces of such height that a secondary walk ran along each battlement to act as a firing step. From regularly spaced embrasures, giant guns pointed outwards, with smaller pieces between. There were many towers visible in both directions, for the wall there was long and shallowly curved, allowing Katsuhiro to see dozens of kilometres, as far as the Eternity Wall spaceport to the north, looming large over the defences to block out the view thereafter, and further south to where the wall was shrunk by perspective to a ribbon and bent around out of sight. Before the dizzying mass of the spaceport, a greater tower jutted skywards over all the others, oval in shape, even more immense than the wall, like a ship athwart the defence. This bore the largest gun he had seen, a macro cannon mounted in a spherical turret. Every minute, the gun barrel drew in and coughed forwards violently, vomiting a gout of fire heavenwards. Katsuhiro learned later that it was the southerly tower of the Great Helios Gate, the major exit through that part of the wall. A part of the plain beyond the wall was visible for a time as the conscripts descended. The ground immediately at the foot of the main defences was obscured by the fortification. Further out, Katsuhiro saw trench works and ramparts. Detail of the plain was lost to the haze of the edge of the Aegis, though the violent light of shells hitting the ground flashed through, and he had a hint of a horizon foreshortened by the drop of the katabatic slopes to the south and east. All over the palace, weapons fired skywards. Plasma, shell, laser and rockets roared towards the War Master's fleet. The counter-barrage was so loud that no voice could be heard, and their guiding official was forced to resort to hand signals or shouted orders directly into the ear of the first man in the group, who passed them back up in a game of whispers. By the time the words reached Katsuhiro, halfway along the line of 300, they had lost all sense. In some confusion, the conscripts descended long staircases, exposed all the time to the wind and the roar of the guns, coming eventually to ground level, shaken, frozen and half-deaf. The journey was long and nerve-wracking, and Katsuhiro relished the relative quiet of the canyon street between the wall and the soaring palace structures behind. It was but a brief respite. The group was rearranged, orders being more easily given there, and then led straight to a small postern guarded by legionaries in green. Few in the group had ever seen a space marine, and they stared at the giants as they shuffled past them. The legionaries ignored the conscripts as they passed between them through the gate. A tunnel led steeply downwards, going through seven adamantium portals before taking a sharp dogleg covered by emplaced heavy bolters. Then through more doors, which groaned violently and flashed red lights at them when they approached, before the final portal opened onto the ground beyond the wall. Again the roar of the guns battered the senses, and their guide led them wordlessly through a maze of trenches. They crossed paths with other groups, who emerged unexpectedly from the tangle of defensive ways before being led off to their own fates. They passed a tall wall of prefabricated sections, going out through a triple gate guarded by a switchback approach. Many groups were using this way, and Katsuhiro's unit were forced to wait their turn in a side trench, where they jumped and moaned at every explosion spreading over the Aegis overhead, and endured the impatient shoves of uniformed soldiers eager to get by. A second lower wall came soon after the first. It stood atop a recently piled slope of rubble that led down, without the interruption of trenches, to a final wall a few hundred metres further out. Of the three main lines, the last was the lowest, the defensive lip being only 2 metres above ground level, and the rampart running behind easily clambered onto from the back. They headed for this wall, then, after reaching it, turned north towards the Helios Gate. By then it was snowing. Gentle at first, the weather gathered itself into a freezing storm that chilled them all and curtailed what visibility there was. Cold and tired, the conscripts were gathered into a square among several dozen others collected at the outermost line and introduced to their leader. The commanding officer was an exhausted-looking man. There was nothing unexpected about that. Katsuhiro hadn't seen a fresh face for weeks, but their new leader excelled all others in weariness, pushing past to the unexplored realms of misery beyond. His skin looked to be ordinarily a light brown, but it had gone a haggard yellow-grey, like a blanket left too long outdoors. His black hair was plastered miserably to his forehead. His lips and nail beds were unhealthily pale. He gave the impression of being a man who had seen everything, and liked very little of it. The pad of flimsies in his hand particularly displeased him. He scanned again the cheap bioplastic films, already disintegrating in the snow melting off his skin, then looked down with pouched eyes at the 300 conscripts, failing to hold a parade ground formation behind the revetment. He did not look impressed. Katsuhiro was right at the front of the group, close enough to hear the officer's voice over the roaring of the attack. They were now some distance from the walls and the violence of the palace guns, while the Aegis stole a good amount of the noise of the enemy's bombardment along with its destructive power.
"Is this it?" said the man miserably. "No officers? It's just me."
"Sign here and here,"
said the official who had brought the group down from the palace.
"Ghosts of old Earth, we're all going to die."
The officer made a depressed sound and scribbled at the form. Part of it came away on the nib of his autoquill.
"They're all yours now."
The official rolled up the disintegrating plastic and shoved it inside his coat.
"For Unity and the Imperium."
He made a fuller quilla over his heart before marching off down the rampart, where he disappeared into the snow. The officer pulled a face and fetched a vox horn from his belt. Feedback squealed when he activated it.
"Right, you lot,"
yelled their new officer over the thunder of the bombs and the moan of the wind.
"My name is Adadahav Jainan.
He held up the flimsies again.
"I'm an acting captain. Lucky me. That makes me your commander. Do what I say, or you'll get shot."
He made an expression that could equally have been a scowl or a smile. He didn't have enough enthusiasm to form either properly.
"That is, I'm sorry to inform you, the full extent of military training that is currently available under the circumstances. You are all now members of the Kushtun Naganda, one of the old hundred, from Ind. Not that you're worthy of the honour, and not that it matters any more anyway."
Pent-up emotions forced themselves up through his world-weary exterior, where they bubbled, briefly visible on his face, before draining away into a general lassitude.
"There was a time when that meant something, but at least you will all have the satisfaction of dying under a famous flag. Our role,"
he said, raising his voice over a sudden upsurge in the bombardment's volume,
"is to reinforce the third line outworks."
He kicked the wall.
"Near Bastion 16.
He pointed down the line, where there was nothing visible through the whirling snow.
"You will form reserves to the very first line of defence. More of that honour when we get there. Yes, I'm afraid that does mean more walking. No, I don't have anything to shelter you from the weather. The sooner we get there, the sooner you can get warm. We go at the pace of the slowest. Feel free to beat a bit of speed into them. But we do have a little bit of time."
He looked upwards.
"The enemy won't be coming today."
Katsuhiro gave a small sigh of relief.
"Don't get too excited,"
said the thin man Katsuhiro had seen cleaning his nails with a knife in the city. He leaned in from behind and whispered into Katsuhiro's ear.
Reservers aren't for keeping back. They're for doing all the scut work. And if the enemy don't come today, they'll come tomorrow. Or the day after.
His voice smiled, but his words were meant to hurt.
Shut up!
Katsuhiro snapped behind him.
There's no need to make it worse!
Got some teeth after all, eh?
Said Doromek, who was a file over from Katsuhiro.
Leave me alone!
Katsuhiro said.
Hey! Hey, you!
Jainan's amplified voice thumped into Katsuhiro's ears.
Yeah, that's right. You! Just so we're all reading from the same manual here, talking when I'm talking is definitely not allowed.
He patted the las pistol at his hip meaningfully.
Got it?
Katsuhiro nodded. Acting Captain Jainan sighed.
Right then. This way.
He turned off the horn and hooked it on his belt, then executed a lazy left turn.
Quick march!
He stopped and held out his arms when half a dozen of the new soldiers went to the rampart to get out of the mud.
Nope,
he said.
I stay up here on this relatively dry prefabricated wall. The rest of you have to trudge through the snow.
He straightened his snow-damp uniform.
There has to be some privilege of rank.
Their march north allowed Katsuhiro a little time to take in his new surroundings. The walls proper soared to improbable heights to his left. Though the spires of the palace were far higher, from his position the walls hid nearly everything behind them, so huge were they. The outworks were tiny in comparison. Being stationed in the maze of walls and trenches that fronted the main fortifications was alarming. His fears increased as the thousands of conscripted men and women continued to pour into the complex, splitting and splitting again as they were directed down differing trenchways already ankle-deep in snow. His dismay continued to rise, while never hitting the peak he expected. There seemed to be no end to how much fear he could feel. It surprised him he was able to walk, or talk, or do anything, but he did. His terrified mind operating his limbs through a buzzing fog of terror. He felt numb inside and out. The bombardment pounded endlessly down. Millions of tons of ordnance exploded upon the palace's shields every minute, their released energies stolen by the void's displacement technology. The Aegis must have been thinner out past the walls. Not that Katsuhiro knew the first thing about military shielding, because periodically, a shell the size of a heavy hauler would pass through and impact the ground beyond the last rampart, sending up a plume of rock splinters dozens of metres high and shaking the soldiers on their feet.
Oh, this isn't so good, is it?
Said the thin man conversationally.
I just love being cannon fodder.
Isn't that right, darling?
He shouted at the woman from the station, who was a few ranks ahead. She scowled at him.
I wouldn't call her darling if I were you,
said Doromek.
Why? She's a looker. I could do a taste of that.
I know her kind, my friend.
She'll kill you.
The thin man snorted.
I mean it,
said Doromek.
Will you shut up?
Said Katsuhiro, addressing both the thin man and Doromek. He was by now more miserable than he had ever been. Outside the city was even colder than inside. His hands were unfeeling claws clamped upon his gun. His teeth chattered. The snow had turned black with ash, and wind chilled the exposed side of his face so that it burned. The air was thin and oxygen poor away from the palace's atmospheric cycling system. Some provision had been made for this. Every half mile or so, giant snakes of soft tubing emerged from the ground and whooshed thicker, warmer air over the outworks. The conscripts noticed these quickly, and ran between them, desperate for the heat and nourishing airflow, though the distances between caused them to flag, and their provision was meagre overall. While approaching the fourth of these outflows, the thin man spoke again.
Well, this snow, you know, is toxic, right?
He jogged alongside. Katsuhiro was too breathless to tell him to be quiet. The man took his silence as interest.
Void shields will stop fast things or big things, and especially big fast things. But small stuff like this, or slow stuff like an infantryman or a tank,
It can't stop that. Rain or snow will fall right through it. This is black snow. The palace is covered in layered void shields so deep it will take the enemy months to pound their way through. Everywhere else on Terra, not so well provided. So what's falling on us is the vaporised remains of the rest of the world. It's full of rad and poison. Kill us all dead eventually. Not that we'll last that long.
I think he said shut up, you.
I'm asking the same, said Doramek to the man, causing him to back off a bit.
What's he mean?
Katsuhiro asked Doramek.
It's a defensive layer thing, said Doramek.
Near the pipes, the snow melted, and they splashed through freezing water running over the ground. He appeared bothered far less by the cold and the thin air than just about everyone else.
Well, they don't need to keep us safe. We're the first line of defence.
First line?
An aircraft screamed overhead, making them all flinch, and more than a few throw themselves into the muddy snow. A soft explosion thumped bare meters over their heads, prompting a lot more of the conscripts to scream and fling themselves down. Katsuhiro included.
Get up! Get up! Shouted Jainan. It's just a bloody leaflet drop. Get up!
He jumped down from the wall and hauled weeping conscripts to their feet. Those who were too tightly curled, he kicked until they stood.
Come on, come on, get up!
Katsuhiro unclamped his hands from his head. A white sheet of paper floated face down in a puddle in front of him. He reached out and picked it up.
Get up! Get up! Everyone, come on!
Jainan glowered after the aircraft.
Bloody propaganda! Does nobody any good?
On the other side of the paper was a poorly printed image of a warrior. A space marine, Katsuhiro thought at first, but closer inspection revealed it was in fact a Primarch. A large 13 was printed beneath him. Lord Gilliman is coming, it read. Stand firm and survive.
Lot of use that, Doramek said.
He reached down. Katsuhiro clasped his arm.
If he gets here at all, we'll all be dead.
Well, that's right,
the thin man nodded sagely as Doramek pulled Katsuhiro to his feet.
First line of defence. They'll keep the legions back behind the main walls for the real fighting.
Well, then what are we for?
Asked Katsuhiro, dreading the answer. Doramek laughed ruefully.
We're here to die, my boy. Soak up bullets. Cannon fodder. As our friend...
Ranniken,
the thin man said.
As Ranniken says...
Doramek smiled sympathetically, attempted to scrape the mud off Katsuhiro, shrugged at the amount and gave up.
The way this battle will play out is so. You see the batteries there, there, and there?
Doramek pointed out the giant guns mounted upon the wall's towers. Flashes and rods of coherent light marked out the presence of thousands more.
I can't really miss them, said Katsuhiro.
Well, now you're getting it, said Doramek,
and slapped him on the shoulder.
There are lots more deeper within. Lord Dawn cut 1,000 towers flat to take guns, guns, and more guns. They stud every high structure, clustering most densely around the spaceports, gates, and especially the Lion's Gate.
Yes,
said Katsuhiro tersely. They began to trudge through the mud again.
Well, yes, obviously. My point is... No real attack can come down until those guns are taken out. If I were the War Master, he said,
Doramek's arrogance was astounding,
then I would attempt to clear an area of crossfire and begin to land my first forces. With men on the ground, the walls will be threatened. All this out here,
he swept his hand about,
will come under intense attack. Some guns will fall, some guns will be reoriented to target the ground. The weight of fire will decrease. That will enable more ships to come down, then more, until the surface of Terra is crawling with the enemy and the guns will cease to speak at all. But first, he has to get through that.
Doramek pointed upwards.
The Palace Aegis. It'll last, but not forever. As soon as that starts to fail, then we'll see the real bombing start. And after that, the proper invasion.
So we're safe for now.
Katsuhiro sneezed. Feeling in his toes and fingers was a fond memory.
If by now you mean for the next few hours, then yes, we are. Safe as the Emperor himself. Not that he's particularly safe at the moment.
We're all going to die,
tittered the thin man. Several of the conscripts within earshot were rigid with fear.
You! Talkative man!
Jainan strode out of the rain. He alone out of the unit wore a rain cape, but it was thin and he was as cold and wretched as the rest of them.
Yes, sir.
Doromek gave a coprophage's smile. The thin man grinned.
I heard you, giving all these wretches the benefit of your wisdom. Are you a military man?
Snapped Jainan.
Don't lie to me. I can check. Save us the time and tell me now.
I was once, admitted Doromek.
And you are again,
Jainan said.
Sir. Indeed. Sir. How many years, and what regiment?
Doromek rubbed at his head.
Atlantean Rangers, 15 years. Raoul? Sniper. Good one?
Doromek waggled his free hand.
So they say. Then how come you weren't called up in the early drafts?
Jainan's eyes narrowed. Doromek shrugged.
Lucky, I guess. Hiding, you mean? Well, your luck's run out. You're my new lieutenant. Congratulations.
He stalked off back into the storm, hollering at the group to get a move on.
And stop diving into the ground at the side of every aircraft. They're all ours. An officer? Me?
Shouted Doromek.
Don't get excited. Acting officer,
Jainan called back over his shoulder. Doromek grinned at Katsuhiro.
That makes you my first sergeant.
They staggered on for another few hundred metres. A dark shape loomed out of the snow to meet them. Katsuhiro peered fruitlessly into the storm. The shape grew firmer with every step, until it stopped being a shape and became a great drum tower, 100 metres tall and almost as wide across, set back some 50 metres from the outermost ramparts. Guns mounted in the walls tracked back and forth across the artificial plateau beyond the aegis. Lights shone through tiny windows in only one place, halfway up the front. Doromek whistled.
I guess that's best in 16.
Jainan's vox-amplified voice cut over the rumble of the Imperial guns and the muffled thunder of the bombardment.
This is it! Follow me! Our section is to the south-southwest. Stay close. Don't get lost. There are uniforms, shelter, food and water waiting for you. Alternatively, you can blunder off into this blizzard and either freeze to death or be executed by the Marshal's Militaris. I hear they're itching to shoot something. Your choice.
Jainan strode away. There wasn't much option but to follow him. Bastion 16, 16th of Secundus. Afterwards, Katsuhiro was not certain if it was the increasing noise of the explosions or the wailing klaxons sounding from the wall that woke him. Mercifully, spared duty, he had fallen into a deep, sudden sleep atop a pile of sacks just as soon as he'd found somewhere to hide. Toxins blared all along the ramparts, wrenching him from slumber into nerve-jangling consciousness in the space of a single breath. He leapt up, flailing around. There were no formal barracks for the new members of the Kushtan Naganda. The storage bunker he found to hide in was unlit, and for a moment he forgot completely where he was. He'd lived in the same room for his entire life. 25 years of familiarity sought to impose themselves upon reality, and he stumbled about, wondering who had moved his few pieces of furniture around. The door opened, catching on poorly finished rockcrete with a squeal. Horrendous noise blasted in from outside.
Out! Out! The enemy are coming! The enemy are coming! Come on!
A wild-eyed man he didn't recognise beckoned frantically. He wore the badly made tabard that marked him out as a conscripted member of the Nagandan. This was the uniform Jainan had mentioned, and not the warm coat Katsuhiro was hoping for. Who the man was, Katsuhiro never discovered. He found his rifle and ran outside. The snow had stopped, and cold sunk its teeth deep into the mountains. Although Katsuhiro had been warm in the bunker, his clothes were still wet. Winter hit him like a blow, so hard he almost missed what occurred. The sky above him was an eye-watering pattern of unnatural colours, holding back an ocean of fire. Something squeaked and ground like ice on stone. Then there was a tremendous bang, and the noise of the bombardment suddenly grew loud enough to shake the teeth in his head. There were people shouting all around him, but he could not hear a word they said. Pulsed shocks of overpressure batted at him. The ground bounced like a drumskin. He staggered about in shock, half blinded by strobing explosions hammering the ground a kilometre distant. Doromek was there, turning him around, pointing and shouting. It took three attempts before Katsuhiro heard what was being said.
"The voids have come down!" he yelled. "The voids over the palace!"
He followed Doromek's finger. He could see it then, a dark space over one of the wall's enormous towers. The edges of other void shields were visible, thanks to the lack of the missing element, layered over one another in flat petals that pulsed like hearts with every impact. They held back their portion of the bombardment, but through the hole, shells fell unimpeded, making it down to the ground and exploding all around the tower. Flames burst off the tower's sloped sides. Katsuhiro tried to ask if they would be targeted next, but nobody could hear him. Warning sirens sang over the explosions, audible only by dint of their shrieking pitch. The huge defense laser that dominated the tower prepared to fire, the nested barrel pulling itself back with a series of business-like metallic booms. With a defiant roar and cast of light, the cannon uncoiled, hurling its response upwards. Whether the las beam hit its target or not, Katsuhiro could not tell. But at that moment, the enemy appeared to notice the section was unprotected, and destruction speared from the night. Five beams of collimated light slammed into the tower, their impacts tightly grouped, each coming in from a different angle. Molten rockcrete and metal poured off the structure in torrents. The beams were persistent and moved along, soaring at the tower. One punched clean through both sides of the building, bringing up a mushroom of fire from within the palace before they all snapped off. Part of the parapet of the attached wall tumbled away, its sheared edges glowing with heat. The gun pulled its muzzle in again, but its last roar had already been voiced. A triple hit of high-velocity mass shot slammed into the spherical turret. Explosions rolled out over the defense works, each one louder than the last. Fire swept out in a hollow disk around the top of the tower, and when it receded, the gun was a tumbling wreck, slipping from its moorings and taking the outer face of the bastion with it.
"Come on, come on!"
The man who had woken Katsuhiro ran past, his need to act dragging a score of his comrades along with him.
"The tower! The tower!"
They made impressive speed through the lying snow, though Katsuhiro saw they could achieve nothing and did not follow. Thin screams crept under the noise of the barrage. The heat of the molten rockcrete singed his face from so far away. In their need to do something, anything, the conscripts raced headlong into danger, while others stood rooted to the spot, weeping in terror. More lance beams scored their way across Katsuhiro's eyes, coming this time from a lower angle. Half of them smeared away to blue light across the neighbouring void shield, but the rest hit the tower squarely, slicing it open down to the magazine. The largest, brightest fire Katsuhiro had ever seen boomed out, breaking apart the tower as it grew from nothing to everything, so big and loud it swallowed the whole of the universe. Searing air knocked him flying, sending him skidding meters through the snow. Debris rained down around him, bringing more screams into the night as men and women were crushed. Gasping for the breath that had been punched from his lungs, Katsuhiro staggered upright onto his knees and remained there, filthy again, his back chilled to the bone by the wind, his front warmed by the dying fires of the tower. Through phosphor-bright after-images burned into his retinas, he saw the tower was gone, a tooth torn out from the root. A single shell corkscrewed down on a spiral trail of fire, bringing up a last explosion. The air thrummed. His skin prickled, and the void shields flexed back into existence over the ruin, glowed like the cells in an insect hive, then faded out of notice. A few hits splashed upon the surface of the Aegis. The bombardment moved off, on to test the next mighty bastion, 10 kilometres away. Doromek found him again.
"The first gun falls. This is it now," he said. "They'll concentrate their fire like that to take out the biggest anti-ship cannons we have. Little by little, They'll nibble it away until there's nothing left to threaten their landing zones.
Landing zones? Repeated Katsuhiro dumbly.
We're lucky, Doramek said sardonically. I'd say they're clearing this area here. They're going to be coming right at us.